Raise your hand if you feel like a king. Now, be careful. Raise your hand if you feel like a king. Now, raise your hand if you know that you're a king. You know, I was thinking about the whole spiritual battle thing that we talked about at camp. And I was thinking how it's easy to just lose sight of who we are in the middle of that. That's why I asked the question a little bit earlier about who are we? Who are we really? And I think that's probably one of the most obscurely answered questions that we experience living this life, because life is present with us. Promises are in the future, and so they're more abstract. But the job of the scriptures is to bring the abstract of what heaven is to us now and help us to understand the reality of it. And so I was thinking about that warrior thing. I think the first time I went through the battle warrior armor, you know, I was searching through my books and I found a picture of a Roman soldier standing there, you know, with his shield and his sword and all the different parts of the armor. And I thought that was pretty instructive. But I made it my goal yesterday to find a picture of a really cool set of armor. That's what I'm talking about. You know, the idea of the armor isn't to make us how we look. It's basically to equip us to be who we're supposed to be, the salvation mind, which is the helmet of salvation. So our mind being guided by the gospel. The heart of righteousness, which is protected by the breastplate, and then being girded about with truth that protects us from the side and protects our innards, you know, from being hurt in battle. And then the idea, and I kind of like these boots this guy has on, because not only do they look real superhero-y, but you know, when you're in battle, it's pretty important to have your feet not get, you know, smooshed at all. If they get smooshed or nicked or whatever, it's not a good thing. And then with that, the faith shield and then the sword of the Spirit, which are the two weapons. The faith shield to absorb, you know, extinguish the darts of the evil one, and then the sword basically to do the will of God in the world. So I thought about that, and I don't mind being a warrior. You know, it's okay. I don't mind being a farmer. I don't mind being an athlete, and I don't mind being a soldier. I'm okay with that because I have to be okay with it, right? I mean, Paul wrestled with it, and he became okay with it. I've fought the good fight. I've finished the course. I've kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord will award to me, and not only to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. So I resonate with the idea of being a soldier. I'm good with that. And I don't mind fighting. It looks a little bit different now that I'm in my 60s than it did when I was in my 30s. But I'm not sure I'm any less effective. In fact, sometimes I think I'm more effective now as a warrior, because I don't do a lot of the stupid things that I used to do, you know, in my 30s and 40s. But all of that accepted, and the hard work of being a farmer that Paul goes to great lengths to describe, you know, in Timothy, it's just a lot of work being a farmer. It just doesn't happen, you know, it just doesn't happen overnight. There's a lot of work. There's the preparation, there's the care. There's the harvest, there's the storing, you know, there's all the different parts of it. And I'm okay with that. That's okay, because that's a part of my spiritual life, is to be a farmer and to see things grow and to engage that process. And, you know, the athlete part I probably can relate the least to, you know, from a perspective of the training that goes into it. But I see the correlation. I see what Paul was trying to get across, is that being a spiritual warrior, I'm going to have to be somebody who has endurance and who understands. You know, like if I decided that I wanted to go run 5 miles today, it would not be a good thing. because I haven't trained to run 5 miles. Now, there was a time in my life when I could run 5 miles, maybe 5.5, but I had to work my way up to it. I had to be ready. And, you know, so I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that part of what it means to be a servant of the Most High God, is that not only am I a farmer, but I'm also an athlete. And I'm okay with the fighting part, because that maybe comes more naturally to me than the other two do. I don't know. But that's the here part. You know, when you and I get to heaven, we're not going to be fighting any fight. The fight's going to be over. In fact, in some senses, the fight's already over, because the victory has already been accomplished because of what Jesus has done. But we still find ourselves in this environment where we need to be the farmer, we need to be the athlete, and we need to be the soldier. And that's what I've been musing on, and that's what the kids are all talking about today in their classes and whatever. They talked about it in their heart time. The idea of the crowns, because there's a reward. Now, I was always kind of afraid of the crowns, because when I was a young man, I was very wary of doing what you do to get something, you know, because that's kind of my human nature. You do what you, if I do this, then it's going to get me that. And I knew that that wasn't right. So I had to learn from God that that really isn't what he was looking for me. What he wanted was, he wanted me to experience selfless reward and selfless crowns. And that's why we talk about the subject of humility all the time. Because God is humbling souls. He's getting us ready to receive our crowns. Now, you've also heard me talk before about the idea of a crown. The word, the Greek word, is in a circles. And that makes sense. But there's kind of a, more of a depth to it. It's like a seamless circle. It encircles. It's all around. So when we talk about God's crowns, or Jesus' crown, or when we talk about our crown, we're talking about a circling, living thing that we're a part of. And so you got to get out of your mind that whole idea about, you've been standing in line in heaven for like 5,000 years, and it's finally your turn, and you get up, and God says, Dave, good job. Here's your crown. I'm going to give you your crown. But first, Dave, this is why it's taken so long. Let's talk about all the things that you did in your life. You got to get over that, because that just ain't going to happen. That's not the way it is. I am sharing in the crown that is placed upon, the many diadems that are placed upon the Lord Jesus Christ, and I'm a part of that glory. That's what being a soldier is all about. It's to find that glory. It's to win that glory, not for me, but to win it for my King. So I'd like to just kind of take a minute and look at that, and then we'll kind of look at the big picture on it. I've renamed the crowns. I was looking through some articles about this. This has been written about, obviously, before. But I really haven't taught much about it, because I didn't feel like I was to the point where I was ready. You know, I wasn't equipped. And there are a lot of things like that. So I just encourage you to stay tuned to this channel, because I just get more equipped all the time as I get older. And, you know, why not hang in there with me, right? Until I just get too old to listen to. Fortunately, I'm sure the elders will deliver you before that. Philippians chapter 4. Verse 1. Now, I want to think about each one of these. You've heard the verses before, but I want to think them through in light of this soldier, athlete, farmer receiving of a crown. Now, this is all relational, by the way. It's got nothing to do with just words on paper. It's all relational. And Paul brings that out when he talks about the crowns. Therefore, my beloved brothers, easy to miss what that means, but that's basically like, you're my heart. My beloved brothers. Therefore, my beloved brothers, whom I'm dying to see you. I long to see you. You are, in this life, you are my joy and my crown. So it's not like we're only waiting for what will come. But part of what comes in our ability to experience and give deep love in this world. And when we give and experience and receive deep love, we're experiencing what Paul's talking about. You are my joy and my crown. In this way, stand firm, my beloved. So the crown of deep love. And so I have to ask myself the question, you know, if I want to participate in the crown of deep love here, certainly Jesus has already participated in it, right? I mean, could he have any deeper love? How deep the Father's love for us. I mean, how could it be any deeper than it is? And that's what I'm being invited into. So if I want to prepare to share in that crown, if I want to have some of the experiences that Paul and some of the other apostles and that Jesus had, then I'm going to have the kind of relationships where people are my joy and my crown. Then I'm experiencing my joy and my crown. So that's one. I love this next one. 1 Thessalonians. You're probably already there, aren't you? Using this old-fashioned thing here. This 1 Thessalonians 2:19. I'm reading a really interesting book right now. It's called Evolution 2.0. And I don't even know how it's going to end, so I'm not going to recommend it. I'm not going to say that. I don't know how it's going to end, but I'm fascinated by it because the guy is looking at creation from a systems perspective, and he asks an interesting question. And he basically, in that question, he is defining the difference between hardware and software. And understanding the hardware about life and eternal life is one thing. Understanding the software is totally different. And it's really kind of interesting. I'll let you know. I'll do a book report on it because it may be helpful to you as you talk to people who wrestle with subjects like that. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 19. Not holding fast to the head. Now, this is in the context of there are a lot of other things we can do with our energy, right? Look up in verse 18. Let no one keep defrauding you of your prize. Whoa. Maybe this has something to do with the idea of crowns and reward. Your prize by delighting in self-abasement and the worship of the angels, taking a stand on visions that he has seen, inflated without cause by his fleshly mind. That's the essence right there of the crowns of the devil. That's the essence of what it means to pursue a counterfeit crown. In a different place? Oh, well, just roll with it. I told you it's all woven together to me. I mean, it's one big woven story, right? That's pretty funny. Oh, I see what's the matter. I'm in the wrong book. But see, now God wanted me to read that because of what we just looked at there, right? About being defrauded of our prize, right? I'll be making bigger excuses as time goes on. Chapter 2, verse 19. For who is our hope? Now I am in 1 Thessalonians. And who is our hope or joy or crown of exaltation? Is it not even you in the presence of our Lord Jesus at his coming? For you are our glory and our crown. And when you look at the words there, it's unspeakable. There is such glory that has come in achieving this and experiencing this in life that it can't even be expressed by words. That's basically what Paul is trying to say. So the deep love crown results in unspeakable joy. If you go to depth of relationships, it will cost you, but the reward is also greater, right? Rachel was talking about Amy. She rose with Amy. Amy knows Jeremy. and Joe because she's a painter. Amy did some painting for Rachel, and so Amy came and did some painting at our house. And so when I think about what happened during that process, my wife's heart kind of got cemented to Amy. Just like out of the blue. You never know when it's going to happen, right? And now here she is, and who knows what a struggle for her life, a struggle for her health, whatever it might be. She's already in the struggle for her soul. But the love that's there, wherever that's going to come from, that's going to be what represents God and results in this unspeakable kind of joy. Let's carefully turn to 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy 4, verse 8. I like to call this the can't wait crown. Because, you know, we have so many things we get excited about. You know, the new iPhone, the whatever. You know, we're just all a Twitter, aren't we, about the new thing, you know. I can't wait till they double the cream cheese and the bagels over at Einstein Bagelry. I mean, that will be something to live for, right? Be excited about. I think you can order that, but it costs extra money right now. The can't wait crown is just filled with anticipation. And in 2 Timothy 4, verse 8, and when look at verse 7, because it relates back to what we were discussing about Paul, I've fought the good fight, the soldier. I've finished the course, the athlete. I've kept the faith, farmer. Okay, those are all evaluative, past tense, looked at my life. This is what I've done. I mean, you talk about a satisfied mind. You talk about whatever came next, being ready for whatever came next. In the future, there is laid up for me, set aside, laid up for me, reserved for me, I think it says in some translations, the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And he's not only going to give it to me, but he's going to give it to everybody else who has loved his appearing. Now, I try to parse the words in there, and I can't necessarily figure out, is he talking about the first appearing or the second appearing? I've come to the conclusion he's talking about the appearing. And I don't know how you feel about Jesus' stay on earth, his time on earth, his appearance on earth. But it was a big deal. It was a big deal for me. Not historically, it was a big deal for me. And I can't even imagine what it's going to be like when he appears. And I will be a part of that. So, loving is appearing. You know, there's a tension, right? I mean, it's not like I don't enjoy life. I love life. I love people, I love things, I love stuff, I even like my iPhone. I like lots of things about life. But the reality is that they're not my crown. They're all temporary. So that's the can't wait crown. And I guess I would ask you just to think about your anticipation. You know, what are you anticipating in your heart? You know, what has captured your imagination? It's not easy to have the coming of Christ capture your imagination. I'm not saying this is easy to do. You put a note on your refrigerator, coming of Christ, let it capture my imagination. No, that's not how it works, is it? It's a lifetime of making a decision about what's important. What is valuable as a farmer? What is valuable as an athlete? What is valuable as a soldier? Over in Revelation, chapter 2. Now, I don't know if you've suffered. Have you suffered? I was thinking about this foot pain. I was thinking the other day, if a nurse asked me, how's your foot pain, Dave? Would you give it a 1 or would you give it a 10? And I'd think, I think I'd give it about a 2.5, somewhere in there. I don't think I need morphine yet, but it's probably around the corner. I was thinking about that in relationship to the suffering that I've been through in my life. And I have suffered. Most of the suffering that I've experienced has been the loss of me. That's where it's really hurt. Not that I haven't had my share of other kinds of loss in life. Do not fear, verse 10, what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison. Now, what a wonderful thing to live where we live and to not have to worry about that verse right there. But what a non-wonderful thing for a lot of people in the world right now. Whether you live in Turkey or whether you live in Iraq or Iran or Soviet Union or China or whatever it might be. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison, into restraints, so that you will be tested and you will have tribulation for 10 days. Be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life. Now, this is the one that I'm not sure that I'm ever going to achieve or deserve. And that's okay with me. But God is going to define that and explain what that looks like with regard to forever life. So, good one to think about. This one I probably, in 1 Peter 5, I've thought about a lot in practical terms just because of what I've ended up doing in my life. You know, learning how to provide shelter has not necessarily come naturally to me. I mean, you know, when I was young, if somebody reached out to punch somebody else, I would jump in and I'd punch them. You know, that was kind of what I was like when I was a kid. So I don't know that that was shelter. But whenever I saw somebody picked on all the way through my school years, I couldn't do anything about it. I mean, it really got me into trouble. In fact, it actually hurt me a couple of times to step in and say, well, you know, why are you doing this? So the shelter gene inside of me is somewhere inside. But that's only from a human perspective. But this passage is talking about providing shelter from a spiritual perspective, a shepherding perspective. And, you know, you guys are aware of the different things that we've done to attempt to shelter other people. And some of that has paid off in remarkable ways. I just had a message this week from somebody that we sheltered, that we provided shelter for, and it made me start crying, thinking about how long it took to have that person recognize that they were being sheltered. Chapter 5, verse 1. Therefore, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness to the sufferings of Christ and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. And I want to tell you right now that you may never serve in the office of an elder, but you will be elder. It'll just happen to you. I mean, like Ray was just talking, pretty soon you're going to be looking into the world around you and you're going to realize, maybe I don't fulfill the office of an elder, but I am elder. Not elderly, but I am elder. Therefore, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God. Don't do it for what you can get, but do it with eagerness. Don't lord over people, those who are allotted to your charge, which is an interesting concept, but prove to be examples to the flock. I mean, what a beautiful picture of what it means to be leading somebody from a spiritual perspective. And I'm not just talking about the office of an elder. I'm talking about older. What a beautiful picture that is. I mean, you just think of what Peter's trying to describe there. Kind of a guileless shelter. A shelter that's sheltering not for what I can get, but for what I'm going to give. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. So, deep love, experiencing unspeakable joy, anticipation, the crown of forever life, and the shelter crown of glory. What beautiful rewards God has prepared for us. I can't help but think that when I bring my casting down my golden crowns before the glassy sea, isn't that in the Bible somewhere? When I get there, I can't help but think about what that will feel like to not come for my crown, but to bring my crowns with me and to set them at the feet of the King of the universe. Finish with 1 Corinthians 9 today. Very appropriate in light of our concept. So, you know, how do you translate this when you talk to a kid? Well, that's what I'm trying to give you here. I'm trying to give you this is the core of it. This is the heart part of it that we've been talking about. I made a little crown and hung it out there in the hallway, and it's got all the things on it, and I'll just kind of be dangling out in the front of the kids' face for the next few months, you know. They're going to go, oh, I'm going to have to look at it. I'm going by it. What does it say there? This is the depth of what it means to express hopeful connection with God. Why do we fight? I wish I'd have known what I know now. I think about my teenage kids and explaining to them that they were in a war. They were in a fight. I wish I would have known better how to express. But why? Why do you hope? Why do you fight? Why do we do what we do? Why don't we just eat, drink, and be merry? For tomorrow we die. But, you know, I guess it's just going to elude me writing that book, The Perfect Parent. 1 Corinthians 9:24. You know that everybody who runs in a race, they all run, otherwise they wouldn't be in the race, duh. But only one gets first place, right? Only one receives the prize. So run in such a way that you may win, that you may win the prize. This is so instructive to me because I just don't look at life like I'm in this like mass of people throughout history who are trying to come out in first place. I'm running my own race. I'm running the race that God has set before me so that I can fight the good fight. I can finish the course. I can keep the faith. Run in a way that you will win. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore, run in such a way, not as without aim. I box in such a way, I'm not beating the air, but I discipline my body. I make my body my slave so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified. So that's the how you run. In the context of why we're running, what we're running for. So, I'd like to pray as we pray together about you and about our kids and about the people around us, that God would give clear pictures of hope, because sooner or later, the fight comes to you. And you recognize it for what it is.